to you. I would be so appreciative of that.
Love Talk Radio.
Okay, here we go. Ready to rock and roll.
Ready to rock and roll. Good music choice.
You're listening to This Week in Health Innovation on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I'm Greg Masters, your producer and co-host of the show. And we are completely stoked today to have one of our best friends and brightest bulbs in the tool shed of the VC investment side of health IT. And that would be Lisa Suenin, who's the managing partner of Silos. Silos is an expert group in identifying and investing in healthcare services, healthcare information technology, and medical technology companies geared towards improving the competitiveness, quality, accountability, and productivity of the healthcare economy. That's a big charge there. With three funds and over $580 million under management, Silos has developed a consistent healthcare investment model since its founding. This has resulted in a markedly distinguished portfolio of companies that enabled Silos to deliver superior returns to its investors. Lisa Suenin, also known on Twitter as Venture Valkyrie, has led the Silos West Coast office since founding the firm in 1998. She currently serves as a director on the board of several Silos portfolio companies, including AngioScore, PatientSafe, Solutions, OmniGuide, and Vera. And Lisa is the founding partner of the Silos Group. So with that as a general introduction, and let me welcome my co-host and partner, Dr. Pat Salber, who joins me on these broadcasts. And we're going to hear a little bit about Lisa, what she's up to, the VC perspective on health IT. And oh, by the way, this is happening during National Health IT Week, so we'll hear a little bit about that as well. So with that as a brief, if not botched, introduction, Pat, over to you. Let's hear from Lisa.
Okay, great. Lisa, well, I've been looking forward to this all week because I know that you make me laugh almost every day because I'm an avid follower of your blog and the writings of Venture Valkyrie. I'm looking forward to hopefully we'll start laughing pretty soon and we'll laugh our way all the way to the end of this broadcast, even though we're talking about something serious like National Health IT Week. And so what I wanted to open with is, you know, as a VC at ground zero for health tech here in the San Francisco Bay Area, you get to see just about everything. And given that this is National Health IT Week, I wondered if you could tell us from your 30,000-foot viewpoint, where's this all going? I know you have a new book, and you're raising the question of whether passionate entrepreneurs can heal healthcare with technology. What's out there that's really, really going to make a difference?
Hi, Pat, and hi, Greg, and thanks again so much for having me here today and appreciate the commentary, and I'll try to be funny if at all possible. It's a really crazy time, right? You know, there's just massive upheaval going on in the healthcare system, and I think some of the big trends that we see that have great investment potential and actually, you know, system-changing potential that's good are around how to get consumers engaged in the exchanges and give them tools to decide how to make choices and think about how to engage in their healthcare a little bit more than they have, although, frankly, I'm not sure most people still want to. I think there's a lot of exciting stuff going on in changing delivery system models and payment models and tools and technologies that enable us to use real data to make decent choices about that. And both the delivery of care and the avoidance of bad care and the payment for value instead of, sort of whatever you got. And I also think there's a whole lot of interesting stuff going on in the digital health, mHealth, whatever you want to call it, you know, stuff attached to phones world. Not quite clear yet what all those business models are going to be and how that stuff's going to be used, but it's pretty clear that there's some you know, sort of revolution going on there besides just, you know, teens texting each other. I think there will be some pretty significant health ramifications about how you use that technology to shift locations of care and patient engagement and all that other stuff.
And so do you think, Lisa, I think about the apps that I engage with on a daily basis. By the way, none of them are health apps.
Yeah.
You know, I have Expensify, which I love and use it whenever I'm traveling. And I have a new one that I just caught called Paper Karma that lets me unsubscribe from all that junk mail. And I'm looking forward to an empty mailbox. But I, even though I hang out in this world and I see all of these health apps, they're really – it hasn't been one yet that jumped up and said to me with a patient hat on, you know, you got to use this. This is the one. And short of that, how really are we going to get there? Do you think these passionate entrepreneurs really get what patient engagement is all about?
Well, I think, and by the way, I also don't use any health apps. I think the most commonly used app on my phone besides Twitter is probably the Starbucks purchasing app. You know, I think the truth of the matter is, and I kind of said it before, you know, I think most people don't want to focus on their healthcare day after day or even minute, you know, at a time or even ever if they could avoid it. And if they could avoid thinking about their health until the minute they died, they'd probably be thrilled as long as it didn't die soon. You know, I think that most people are not looking to be engaged. They're not looking for data, and they're not looking for apps. Thus, I think it's more a function of using technology to help people make, you know, sort of in the moment, in the normal course of the day kinds of choices that might contribute to their health, like shopping, for instance, better shopping. There's companies like Zipongo out there, I think about, that might, you know, border on sneaking into health, but, you know, disguises itself more as helping you shop healthy, which I think people are somewhat interested in, at least if they live in the, you know, Mill Valley zip code. I think, you know, it's more about, I think technology is more about, now that I've, you know, now that I've got a healthcare issue to deal with, or at least today, now that I've got a healthcare issue to deal with, how do I do it efficiently? How do I do it conveniently? I think that's a big aspect for patients is convenience. You know, privately to the extent they care if they're, you know, not of the Facebook generation. And then also sort of how do you, okay, so now that I've got this horrible, you know, situation, chronic illness, whatever it may be, how do others engage with me, whether I like it or not? I think, you know, the place where some of the more, you know, med tech type mHealth activities are interesting, there's a lot of stuff going on in diagnostics. And as we all know, that was, you know, diagnostics has been a mixed blessing on the med tech side outside of mHealth because, you know, where there's diagnostics, there's excess treatment. But on the other hand, if you can use it for screening or home use to avoid medical visits, like in the case, I think about CellScope, you know, if you could use your iPhone to diagnose your baby's ear infection and avoid going to the doctor, that's a really positive thing. Or in communities where there is no diagnostic capability from the, you know, provider community, you know, I don't know. You know, unless it conveys, you know, free points and, you know, whirly belly, you know, sounding things, you know, people just don't like it. They like to play, you know, Scrabble on their iPhone. They don't want, for the most part, except for those few, to be engaged. They want to just be healthy.
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting because, you know, I know you're on the Twitter sphere as Greg and I are as well, and, you know, that famous quotation that, you know, patient engagement is going to be the, you know, the new blockbuster drug. But mm-hmm. In actual fact, I think you're exactly right that most of us don't, first of all, most of us don't want to be patients and mm-hmm. don't want to think that you have to engage me. What we really want is to make health and wellness and even living with my chronic illness, you know, a part of my, you know, activities of daily living, that it's all blended in. And what we really need is maybe not another app, but a healthier community.
Yeah, yeah. I remember seeing recently, I can't remember where I saw it, but I saw a survey that said that, you know, that done a survey of a bunch of people, thousands of people, and the result was that everybody – in the survey felt that their generation or their peer group was the healthiest peer group alive. That just made me laugh because, you know, obviously not everybody can be better than 50%. But, you know, people just don't have perspective on these things in a way that, I think they want to think about it. That, you know, it's like the way people think about Congress, right? I hate Congress, but I like my congressman, although I got mixed feelings myself. You know, they think they're the healthiest generation, and probably they also think they're the best looking, you know, and most interesting as well.
So how do you take what we just talked about and turn that into a financing model? Because that's your business, right? You're in the business of giving entrepreneurs money. And how do you go about that? First of all, tell us a little bit about Silos, because I know you and I've talked before. You're not funding early stage, you're funding a little bit later stage. So if you could explain
right.
how that works, and then tell us a little bit about how do you decide who gets the money?
Okay. Well, Silos, and while I appreciate Greg, promoting me to a higher calling, I'm one of three founding members of the partner team here. There are five partners at Silos. Three of us founded it together. Five of us have been together since nearly the beginning, which was 15 years ago when we started it. And we started the fund with a mission to find companies that improve quality but reduce cost as their primary focus. You know, we invest in primarily IT and services, all healthcare, although we do also some med tech. And we, you know, so when we think about the companies that we're going to fund, and we don't do Series A or even Series B a lot of times, we really are focused on companies with, you know, revenue, you know, kind of beyond the $5 million range or even better. We think about how they fit into the healthcare economy. That's the first thing we look at. So it's like classic follow the money. Where, you know, who in the system's losing money as a result of a problem or has a financial challenge as a result of a problem in the healthcare delivery system somewhere, and how by using this new technology or service can you reduce the cost burden to that population and align the financial incentives of patients and payers and providers? And, I mean, it sounds a little bit like, you know, seeking harmonic convergence, and sometimes it feels like it. But there are definitely opportunities to do that. And I think particularly now is probably the best time in my career to be thinking about it from an investment standpoint, because there's so much disruption. And, you know, disruption leads to chaos, and chaos leads to the search for fixing it. And the fixing is in the solutions that entrepreneurs are starting to bring forward. So we're looking at things, like I said, around the exchange, around new forms of insurance, around how do you reduce medical errors and waste in the delivery of care, how do you engage consumers in a way that's practical, not by selling to them directly, but through business solutions that they might be, you know, interested in. I think there's a lot of great opportunity right now, actually.
So if you're comfortable doing this, can you tell me what is your biggest success? What's the company that you invested in that really blew it out of the water maybe surprised you? And then I also want you to tell me which was the one that was your biggest failure, if you don't mind, one that you sure was going to blow it out of the water and ended up drowning instead.
Oh, my goodness. there's several of the latter. I think in the former case, we've had a couple of really great successes at Silos. We've been fortunate to the most recent, I think the one that is sort of interesting and relevant, particularly today, with yesterday's announcement by Walgreens that they're going to start funding, giving all their employees money to buy their own health plans and stop providing group health plans to their Walgreens employees. I don't know if you guys saw that in the New York Times yesterday. But we invested in a company called Extend Health 5-6 years ago, which was the first private health insurance exchange. So they do what, you know, ostensibly the state healthcare exchanges are supposed to do, to help private large corporations move their, in this case, retirees, in their case, into health insurance exchanges where they can buy products and, you know, insurance products locally in their communities wherever they're retired, instead of, you know, in Detroit where they used to work at the, you know, car factory. And when we invested in that company, which was and still is led by a brilliant guy named Bryce Williams, very forward-thinking, he, as we believe that this transition from corporations paying for insurance or buying insurance on your behalf in a paternalistic way to just paying for it and letting you be on your own was a trend that was coming and probably coming fast. And fortunately, we were all right, and that was a company that we invested in very early for us. I mean, it was probably doing about $1 million in revenue when we made the original commitment, but we were very fortunate to sell it to Towers Watson last year for, almost $450 million. So that's probably been our biggest success in terms of absolute dollars and one of the most profound impact areas, although I think back on Active Health, which was one of our very first investments, and probably the very first big data clinical analytics company, really, in a meaningful way, even though none of those kind of words really existed back then. Big data used to just be data once upon a time. And, we invested in that very early. We were a lead investor in that, and we sold it ultimately to Aetna. But their business was basically identifying patients who had major errors in the delivery of their care by gathering all of the data they had about them, whether it was claims or lab or whatever you could get your hands on, even if it was retrospective, compiling it into patient-centered records, running it against algorithms, and identifying the few individual people that day that might die or be seriously injured by omissions or, in the delivery of care, commissions of, bad care delivery, whatever. And you'd call the company would have doctors call their doctors and say, Hey, you're aware this guy might die if you don't do something different? And it was phenomenally successful, saved, just mountains of money for the self-insured employers and carriers that used it, and still lives on, wildly successful today inside of Aetna. And now, in terms of big failures, that's always an interesting question. I think the one that I feel most sad about when I, look back, which I try not to do because, certainly doesn't help, is Navitas. Navitas was a company, it was a health services company that was founded by some folks very clinically astute about the horrible side effects that cancer patients face when they go through treatment. And so their mission was to provide a set of ancillary services like very targeted physical therapy, nutrition, mental health counseling, and a variety of other wraparound services to people undergoing cancer treatment in order to reduce the negative impact of the treatment on their overall health. Because as we all know, unfortunately, and probably everybody has a friend who's had cancer, if the cancer doesn't kill you, the treatment will for sure. So while that was a really great idea, and they packaged it as a set of services that they could provide inside an oncologist's office or as a separate clinic or whatever, we just couldn't get it off the ground. And the reason we really, in the end, couldn't get it off the ground wasn't because anybody thought it was a bad idea. I think everybody thought it was a good idea, especially patients and their families. But doctors, oncologists, just couldn't wrap their minds around integrating it into the flow of care and the referral process, and they didn't make enough money off of it to continue it. I mean, it's always follow the money, right? And in the end, there just wasn't an economic story that was compelling enough for the doctors who had to provide or make available the service, even though, breaking our own rule, in the end, I guess, the cost offset where the money was saved was really at the payer. By people being hospitalized less and all the rest for all the side effects of cancer treatment that happened so amazingly often. So we broke our own rule, or we were blind to the fact that we were, saving the money for one guy, but the sort of the work was, in the hands of the other guy, and just did not come together and ultimately failed. It was really disappointing.
So this is a really interesting question because timing is everything, right?
And exactly.
It sounds like a great idea. And certainly there was this recent Crowds Care for Cancer campaign that took place, I think it was OMC and NCI and MedStarter. And, you know, and now we're in a different age with a lot of these accountable care organizations coming up and a whole different relationship between payers and providers and patients and the way the money flows. Do you think if that company came to you now, it would be a different story? I know there's no way of knowing for sure, but I just wonder what you think about, you know, that as a timing issue.
Well, I definitely think that if you fast forward to the time, which may be long after I'm dead, that all of the provider groups are really at risk for what they're doing, that would make a difference for sure. Because when you have, you know, the risk and the volume, you know, issues separated from each other, you have an inherent system failure. And that's what we got with Navitas. I think if you really had true accountable care organizations, and then they really knew how to make money and to manage risk and to think about patients over the long term, that it would probably have a better shot at success. But, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I think that it's going to be a long time before we see that, the perfection of that model. In fact, I had an exchange this morning with Farzad Mustashari at the ONC about this very topic, about how long is it going to take, and, you know, can you have a world of value-based pricing and, you know, sort of more holistic patient thinking, you know, when there's lots of providers still in private practice, when there's lots of providers who aren't at risk and all this stuff. And, you know, we agreed that you could in theory, but that the tempo would definitely not be fast. It would be, as they say in the symphony business, lento. So.
Muy lento. Muy lento. But, you know, I have to say, having been in healthcare for a really, really long time and gone through a bunch of rounds of attempts at healthcare reform, in the last 30 or 35 years, I don't think that I can remember a time when things were going as fast as they are now. So I'm a glass half full person, and I hope that that the muy lento maybe will only be lento, or maybe it will even be whatever the next step up, not being a musical person.
Of course, the glass is always full because the part that's not water is air. And the question is whether it's hot air. You know, if it's hot air, we're all going to be very disappointed.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So, Lisa, you and I are going to be playing on the stage at the mHealth Summit. You in a presenter role, and I'm going to be have the opportunity to be the moderator for at the mHealth Summit Venture Plus Forum that's coming up. And tell us a little bit. You have a great title to your presentation, The New Golden Age of Innovation and Investment. A lot just in that short phrase, opportunities and challenges of an evolving healthcare landscape. What on earth are you going to talk about?
Well, probably some of the same stuff we just mentioned. You know, I think, you know, you're right. You know,
so this is just practice.
I also, I'm sorry?
So this is just practice.
Yeah, this is just practice, exactly. And God help anybody who's stuck moderating me. I think that, you know, I really agree with you that the pace of change is much faster than at any time I've been in healthcare. And unfortunately, you know, I've been there a long time too. Fortunately or unfortunately, actually, I love it. But, you know, and I've also seen many attempts at system change, which were met with, you know, significant lack of system change. And I think it really is changing now. And I think, you know, the factors that are driving that are primarily the economy, just generally, the pressure on companies and the government and payers in general, whoever they may be, just to, you know, absorb the cost of healthcare in this country is just beyond, you know, beyond fathomable, and they just can't anymore. And I think it's forced a huge pushback and a huge change. And I think when you add into that little stockpot all of the available new technologies that are cheap and easy to use and that weren't around the last couple times we attempted to change the system, you know, you have a lot of interesting ingredients for some kind of new soup. And then, you know, the flame or the accelerant, I guess, and the fire is the ACA, right, the Accountable Care Act, which has not, you know, really it was designed more for, in my opinion anyway, increasing access to insurance and care, not so much for cost containment, but kind of lays the infrastructure and groundwork for all of the other pressures to be released. And so, again, I think there's, you know, monumental opportunity for investment, and golden age of innovation just sounds so nice, doesn't it? So I really expect to talk about, you know, some of the things that are going on in the way, you know, people's roles, people meaning, you know, patients, payers, and providers are changing in the system, and how that creates opportunity for what's coming now, whether it's how to manage all that risk we just talked about if you're a provider and what you have to think about, you know, how to become, I think there's huge opportunity in thinking, and I don't know exactly what it is yet, I'm still trying to think about it, what all these companies that have been payers like the Aetnas and Uniteds and Cignas and everybody of the world have to figure out, and provider organizations, hospitals in particular, have to figure out how to become branded consumer organizations in a very different kind of way. And you see companies that are in the consumer business, like Walgreens, Walmart, stepping into that void and sort of starting to own that relationship with the consumer of healthcare, not of just stuff, but of healthcare, true healthcare, in a way they never had before. And if I were at the traditional sort of big healthcare corporations, I'd be very anxious about that. How do you change your brand from, you know, the guy in the Darth Vader mask to a consumer-friendly organization? That's a big change in thinking and a big change in how you sell and who you sell to and all the rest. I think there's some interesting stuff in there somewhere. And as a dyed-in-the-wool marketing person, I can't help but think about it. And
I agree with you. I just want to say that, you know, I know a couple of years ago when all this froth first started happening, I had in my mind that, oh, the insurers, you know, really are going to be in trouble. The ACOs are coming. You know, the original idea of the ACO wasn't to be insurance dominated, and, you know, where's the industry going to fit in? And I have to say that I've been amazed, particularly by companies like Aetna, maybe a little bit like with Humana, at how these pretty conservative, traditional organizations have managed to morph, not completely, but embrace this mHealth revolution and really start to experiment with new delivery models. So maybe all is not lost for the industry yet.
I agree with you. I mean, I've been very heartened by that, too. There's a lot of experimentation going on, a lot of creativity. I think the challenge is how do you get that word out and that real, true feeling out down at the consumer level? Because I think those of us who are sort of insiders see a lot of it, but the, you know, sort of regular people in East, you know, middle of nowhere, Kansas, I don't know if they're seeing that. So that bridging that gap.
They're probably still seeing their claims denied.
Well, yeah, and, you know, if you look at any survey, consumer survey done of, you know, the reputation of different industries, you know, insurance companies are down there right below the cable companies. You know, it isn't pretty. So there's a lot of work to be done there, and I think in the hospital side, it's a little easier because they're usually the biggest employer in communities. They're, you know, very powerful brands in communities, but they're not usually thought of as, you know, sort of your lifestyle companion in health. They're usually thought of as a place you have to go to and want to get out of. So
right.
You know, there's a lot of work to do, I think, in a world where we believe true consumer engagement matters. It'll be very interesting.
It will. So time has zipped by. It's unbelievable, Lisa. It's been so much fun talking to you. And I want to close with having you tell us about your book. And we are offering you a little hype for the mHealth Summit. Health Innovation Media, of which this radio show is a part, is going to be a media sponsor at mHealth Summit. And we just offered to Lisa the opportunity to do a book signing at our booth. And we're really excited to hear you tell us about the book and how people can get their hands on it.
I am very excited about the book, and thank you so much for both promoting it here for me and for offering us that opportunity at mHealth Summit. The book is called Tectonics, Compassionate Entrepreneurs Heal Healthcare with Technology, and it was written by both me and David Shaywitz, Dr. David Shaywitz, who's a Forbes writer and, you know, brilliant guy and great thinker about healthcare topics of all types. And the book really tries to address some of the things we've been talking about. You know, what is happening in innovation? How can entrepreneurs make a difference? What are the barriers? you know, and how do we break them down? And you can buy the book at Amazon.com. If you just look up my name, Lisa Soonan, or Tectonics, with an H under tech, you'd find it there. We hope you enjoy it. Please tell us.
And that's it. I'm going to have to step in and say thank you very much to Lisa Soonan, and we're going to do this next week starting Monday at 10 a.m. with Matt Holt for a Health 2.0 Countdown. Rick Master, right now.